but as more people request earth-friendly printing, the price will come down. For more information, check out earthcareradio.org. I'm Vicki Wolf with CLEAN, Citizens League for Environmental Action Now. And that's Earth Care for today and a better tomorrow.
Happy Thanksgiving from KPFT. Please stay tuned for free speech radio news, followed by KPFT local news. And now, here is New Capital Show.
Capital Show. Beautiful, beautiful day on this Thursday the 26th. Hope you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Wishing you the best to you and all your loved ones. Again, my name is Stuart Dow, sitting in for Leo Gold, who is on vacation. Today's subject's a little bit unusual. It does relate to capital in honor of Leo and the New Capital Show. How could I depart from the name? But it's a different sort of capital. I want to talk about human capital. Human capital. Now, let me tell you just a little bit about my background, which informs my interest in the subject. I used to be a lawyer, commercial litigation attorney. So my job was to either represent or defend, or in all cases represent, serve as a plaintiff or a defendant in all sorts of actions, commercial transactions, where there was an aggrieved party. The work was high-minded in some ways, but it eroded my soul. I found it suffocating, to be real honest. Intellectually stimulating, but I found myself watching my clock or my watch too many times during the day, looking up, wondering if I could leave yet. And of course, that business is built on billable hours. So, ultimately, I heeded the voice that was talking to me for a long, long time, and I left the field of law and I went into education. I now come to you as someone who spent 10 years teaching. I started my own school. And nothing meant more to me than working with kids, parents, teachers, and building a community of learners. One of the observations that I want to share with you and talk about three vignettes and ask for you to respond to them is whether it was a teenager or a parent or a member of my faculty and staff, what I saw was this constant search and struggle for personal meaning. It is a constant search that each of us faces, but we also have it with respect to personal interactions. So there's the individual learning to develop who he is, who she is, but there's also that sense of that person then learning how to interact with others. So today on this Thanksgiving, what I ask you to consider is what you're truly thankful for in this realm of human capital. What are you most thankful for as it relates to your own development, but also your interaction and your development with people around you? Phone number to reach me at the New Capital Show, Stuart, is 713-526-5738. Again, 713-526-KPFT. What I want to do is share three vignettes with you, and then in between the vignettes, play some music from one of my favorite albums, Elton John's Tumbleweed Connection. This is a method I often employ with my students. Throw out an idea, throw out a story, and then ask them to take in, internalize the story, and respond to it in whatever way feels right. So I encourage you out there to do the same on this beautiful Thanksgiving. The first, there was an article in Atlantic Monthly from June of this past summer. The article was entitled, What Makes Us Happy? Again, Atlantic Monthly, June 2009, What Makes Us Happy? Once again, it's the search, the perpetual search for meaning that is universal. The article focused on a study that came out of Harvard, and it is the largest, or one of the largest, and perhaps the longest, and I'll explain what I mean by that in just a second, study of its kind. Here's what they did. For 73 years, they tracked the lives of 268 men. So second-year sophomores at Harvard, back in the 1930s, were asked if they would participate in this study. The volunteers agreed to do so, and as part of being in this study, what that meant was that they agreed to physical examinations, psychological interviews, filling out surveys, and then doing it for as long as they were willing. And in some cases, you had participants who literally did it up until the day they died for over 70 years. Run by a guy, a psychiatrist, run by several people, but ultimately the bulk of the work was done by a psychiatrist named George Vallant. The concept was simple. There is this question that all of us grapple with, which is, what can make me happy? What will make me happy? So that's what the article, that's what the study was trying to understand, and that's what the article in Atlantic Monthly is about. What are the conclusions? Well, that's what's powerful. Let me first tell you, because so many of us are looking for some sort of recipe for not just success, but for happiness, that there are no easy answers, and that won't surprise you. There's not a binary set of do this, don't do this. Yes, no, here it is, this will make you happy. It doesn't work that way. And the article and the essay make clear that there was just no way to resolve it so clearly. So what makes us happy? Well, it turns out that the author of the study, George Vallant, ends up telling stories. He tells stories about these men from Harvard, and he gleans a few conclusions. First, I'll tell you a story that he tells. He tells the story of a little boy. It's two little boys. One little boy is given for Christmas a bag, and in this bag is a beautiful golden wristwatch. Beautiful golden wristwatch. In the second bag for this other young man is, hold your nose, manure. It's horse manure. So two gifts, two different children. Gold watch and horse manure. What's the reaction? What's each individual's reaction to his respective gift? The first kid says, a golden watch? Oh my God, but it's so delicate and so expensive, it'll inevitably break and I'll lose it. The other kid who gets the manure, horse manure, says, horse manure, this is fabulous. That means there has to be a pony or a horse around here somewhere. Now, Vallant says that because he says, clearly our instincts are that people would react just the opposite. So what is it that led that first kid who has a beautiful gift to actually assume the very worst? And what is it about the second kid who receives literally a bag of, you know what, who says, well, this must be a good sign? He calls it adaptiveness, our ability to adapt to that which life presents us. Right? And you and I both know that there are some people who react to the exact same stimulus one way, and other people who react to the same stimulus in an absolutely different way. Anna Freud, Sigmund Freud's daughter, called these defensive mechanisms. We each have them, but they will direct whether we're happy or unhappy in life. Two last thoughts, and then I'll take our first caller, Colleen. Thanks for holding. They asked the author of the study, So now, 73 years later, you've been watching over 260 men who have faced an sort of extraordinary number of different kinds of challenges in their lives. What bottom line can you tell us? What makes us happy? What's most important? And the psychiatrist, George Vallant, said, let me be very clear. It is not your job. It is not the amount of wealth you attain. It is not your position or power. Nothing matters more than relationships. That's it. It is the people you surround yourself with, and it is how you interact with those people, whether it is at home or at work. Folks, it's about relationships. The largest longitudinal study ever done, and that was the psychiatrist's conclusion. Second observation about kids, by the way, and I say this as an educator and a parent. He did a separate study, not the Harvard men, but a group of inner-city kids from Boston, and they asked the psychiatrist, so with these kids, what makes them happy? What's most critical in a child's life? He called it industriousness. That's an old-school word. What he really meant was keep them busy. Have them engaged in something, whether it's music, whether it's poetry, whether it's choir, school, after-school activities, sports. Don't just let them go home and be. Don't just let them text message, which, of course, wasn't happening in the 30s, but happens plenty now. Have them engaged and interacting with the world. So staying engaged and busy on the one hand for a young person, and as we get older, what is it that defines our happiness? Relationships. Something powerful to think about on this Thanksgiving. Colleen, you're on line one. Thanks for being patient. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to segue into a couple things. I thought it was really interesting you just mentioned, whether you're old or young, keeping you engaged. And as we age, we learn that relationships really are our wealth, our true wealth. And I was just at a what's called a Transition Houston workshop, which is, you know, post-peak oil and climate change together and what kind of world that's going to be. It was kind of a futuristic two-day seminar. And what we learned as 20 of us came together in a center about 30 miles outside of Houston is that we all had different skills, and combined, as we interacted, Stuart, they formed a wealth of information and talent. And I said, we're creating a wealth pool right here.
That's nice. That's nice. Tell me again what the conference was, Colleen.
It's called Transition Houston, and it's part of a movement that began out of permaculture in Ireland and Great Britain and those countries a few years ago, and now it's transitioned to Houston. Houston is the largest city, actually, to be involved in this transition movement, which is looking at, you know, a post-peak oil and climate change world combined, not only from a surviving aspect, but from a thriving aspect. And a lot of it goes back to sharing our skills and sharing the skills that, you know, our grandparents knew about and we're trying to relearn and reskill. A lot of it has to do, of course, with, you know, something that Michelle Obama kicked off at the White House with her garden, her organic garden. And, of course, gardens are very important, you know, growing your own or bartering, trading, local monies, all kinds of local, you know, the emphasis on local, basically. And anyway, what I wanted to talk about is a project I've been watching, very interested in the educational aspect, Washington Heights, an inner city school, middle schoolers, mostly Latino, low income. And the principal there is kicking off a project of inviting the best teachers he could find in the nation to come and participate in a new learning environment for these low-income Latino kids in Washington Heights and New York. And he is himself, you know, taking a lower salary than the teachers and giving the teachers a good salary, you know, by our standards. And I know education, like healthcare, is a very complex animal and gets wound up in all kinds of politicking. But just like, you know, I just mentioned at the beginning of this conversation with you, Stuart, that wealth is really in the hands of us as parents and teachers and educators and citizens, and we really need to connect with each other locally and develop that local wealth talent.
Well, Colleen, thanks for your comments. I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the things that I'll suggest, and we'll take a music break before we take another break in just a second, is schools, I think, need to do a better job of working on that sense of creating community. Schools have an obligation, in my view, not just to teach academic skills, which obviously are important, but relational skills. That gets you through the world, and as we know, and it strikes me that whether you have a Harvard study to show it or not, all of us who have lived long enough realize that that sense of being able to relate well to others and develop our own personal sense of self, that's ultimately not only what will help us forge success in our respective endeavors, but it'll give you the sense of contentment, of fulfillment. The end of the article in the Atlantic Online, or the Atlantic Monthly, about the Harvard study, the author put it this way. I think it's a nice way to end and go into the first song that I'd like to ask you to consider, called Amarina from Elton John. The author of the Atlantic Monthly put, only with patience and tenderness can a person surrender his barbed armor for a softer shield. Mm-hmm. The key to the good life is not rules to follow, nor problems to avoid, but an engaged humility and earnest acceptance of life's pains and promises. Let's take a break and go to the first song. Thank you. Yeah. Amarina from Tumbleweed Connection. All right, Tony owes us a traffic update. Tony, how are we doing out there on this happy Thanksgiving?
Thankfully, it is a light traffic day. As soon as this turns, then we can check this out. Okay, today we have construction and pavement repair happening on I-10 East Katy, going eastbound at I-45 North. Now, the two main lanes are involved. The left shoulder lane is involved, and the entrance ramp is currently closed, so expect delays. And we have pavement repairs on I-45 Northbound at I-10 Katy. The right interchange ramp is currently closed, so please expect delays. And now back to you.
Thank you, Tony. Again, my name is Stuart Dow. This is the New Capital Show. Leo Gold is on vacation. Thanksgiving edition. The subject is human capital. Human capital. I introduced the program by sharing with you that I was going to tell at least three vignettes or stories that on first glance may seem completely unrelated, disparate, distinct, and yet I'm going to suggest to you at the program's close that I think they're very connected. All right, we're on prompt number two. My students know, incidentally, if you missed the beginning of the program, I am a reformed lawyer. I left the practice of law to go into education. So when I refer to my students, that's because I am a teacher. My students know that I always make reference to my toddler, Eleanor. I learn a lot from my daughter, Eleanor. So of all the relationships that we learned about in that first Atlantic Monthly article, that Harvard study, we know that nothing matters more to ultimate personal sense of fulfillment than relationships. When I look at my own life, I have many important relationships. I don't know that any impact me as deeply and as immediately as my four-year-old toddler daughter, Eleanor. So here's the thing about Eleanor. She has unbelievably beautiful hair. No, I'm serious. This is not just a subjective daddy. I'm telling you, we'll be walking at HEB and people will stop and say, "Oh my God, look at that hair." All right, it's gorgeous. It's this golden sort of curly mess. She has locks of hair, right? And so people literally will say, "My God, she actually looks like Shirley Temple." Well, that, of course, doesn't mean anything to a four-year-old, so I have to go to YouTube and show her who Shirley Temple was. And in fact, she dances and sings. I mean, she's got a whole sort of little actress thing in her, but which is going to be a nightmare later in life, I know. But in any event, so she's got this beautiful golden hair. Let me tell you why I tell you about her hair. About 2 months ago, Eleanor starts complaining about her hair. And I don't just mean complaining. I mean that every morning she says, "Daddy, Daddy, I can't stand my hair. Make it straight, make it straight." And I'm thinking, where did this come from? Where did this come from? Her hair is beautiful. She has these friends, Mia and Gia. That sounds like a bad cartoon, but actually those are their names, Mia and Gia. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe Mia and Gia have straight hair. Well, one of them does. I don't think that's the issue. So I'm sort of grappling with, "Eleanor, why are you so upset about your hair? Don't you realize it's beautiful? Don't you remember the two women who stopped you in the grocery store?" Yeah, I don't care. "Put it in a ponytail. Wet it. Make it straight, Daddy. And clips. I need more clips. I don't want to see any curls." I'm thinking to myself, I don't know where this came from. And then it occurred to me. It's the damn Disney dolls. All these princesses that Disney has sort of perpetrated, right, upon me and my family, they all have straight hair. Not one of them has curly hair. All right, now I'm going to take you back in time. I went up east to school at a pretty liberal institution, and I remember people of color complaining that these dolls out there, that they aren't healthy role models, and that it's important for the companies like the Barbie company to come up with different kinds of models, not just in terms of body type, but even color. Well, I will confess to you, being a liberal guy, that I was sympathetic, I was empathetic, but I always thought they were slightly overstating the case. I'm thinking, come on, it's a doll. How much of a big impression on a person or a kid could it make? And then, right there, I'm dealing with my toddler who's screaming about her hair, and the only reason is because of the doll. The doll doesn't have curly hair, therefore her sense of beauty, which derives directly from the princesses, the images and the books and the movies and the dolls, her sense of beauty is women, girls have straight hair. That's pretty. And if you don't have that, then you're something substandard. Well, all of that, by the way, turns out to be relevant because if you've been following your important toy news, you see that Barbie has now come out once again. There's a black edition of Barbie. You can go on to CNN.com. It was in several parts of the press, of course. Just came out, and so I've forgotten what her name is. I assure you that my daughter Eleanor knows. these dolls were created by a woman named Stacy McBride Irby, African-American woman, who in effect had the same experience with her daughter that I had with mine, only mine was not reacting to the skin color, mine was reacting to the hair type, but Ms. McBride Irby's daughters were reacting. So these dolls now have what they call fuller lips, curlier hair, although some people are claiming they're not curly enough, and features that they say more accurately represent African-American women. I have to tell you, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago, I would have said, oh, I don't know, this is just sort of political correctness gone nuts. This is people who are too sensitive. Now, with a child of my own reacting to those same stimuli, I have a whole new appreciation for the power of those images around us. So now here's my question. We know then that the external norms, that sense of what's out there that we are supposed to believe is beautiful or is smart or is the way that you should act or hold yourself or look, that those things do impact kids. So what do we do with that knowledge? What do we do with it? What do you do with it if you're a parent? What do you do with it as a teacher? Can you do anything with it as a consumer? If you're a designer and you've had that experience, shouldn't you have some obligation to respond to that? If you're a business owner, and do we think it goes away, right? In other words, is it only my four-year-old Eleanor, or are you right now on this beautiful Thanksgiving day reacting to these external stimuli, these things out there that tell you what you should be or what you should look like, what you should think? Are you responding to it in ways that you're not even aware? Does it go away? Second song is called Love Song from the same album, Tumbleweed Connection, Elton John. If you could play it, Tony. Again, the caller, if you're interested in calling, the number is 713-526-5738. Again, 713-526-KPFT. This is the New Capital Show. Stuart Dow sitting in for Leo Gold. Looks like we're having some technical difficulties, so you're going to have to wait on this beautiful song called Love Song by Elton John off Tumbleweed Connection. So prompt number two is Eleanor and Barbie. Prompt number one was Atlantic Monthly. If we get the tune up and going, we'll play it. Otherwise, let me move to a third prompt. There it is. There's Love Song.
The words I have to say may well be simple, but they're true. Until you give your love, there's nothing more that we can do. Love is the opening door. Love is what we came here for. No one could offer you more. Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen? You say it's very hard to leave behind the life we knew. But there's no other way. And now it's really up to you. Love is the key we must turn. Truth is the flame we must burn. Freedom the lesson we must learn. Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen?
3:27 on November 26, 2009. Beautiful Thanksgiving. Wishing you and your family the very best. This is Stuart Dow sitting in for Leo Gold on the New Capital Show on KPFT. The number to call in, 713-526-KPFT. That's 713-526-5738. Today on the show, we're talking about human capital, asking you to consider what is it that you are thankful for on this Thanksgiving holiday in the realm of human capital. Each of us struggling for personal meaning, each of us struggling to enhance the relationships in our lives. We've considered two apparently disparate ideas. First, we talked about an article from Atlantic Monthly. This past summer, Atlantic Monthly ran a fascinating article on an extraordinary study out of Harvard, the largest and longest study of its kind, following over 265 men from Harvard over a 70-year period to learn what is it that helped these gentlemen achieve happiness or not. Some ended up living very fulfilled lives. Others committed suicide. A range of experiences. Some went to war, of course. Others avoided war. Some attained extraordinary wealth, extraordinary positions of power. Some became U.S. senators. But the author's study, George Vallant, well-known psychiatrist, said of all the things that he looked at, of all the factors that may have contributed, you would think, to their sense of happiness or fulfillment, wealth, professional attainment, power, human relationships mattered most. Human relationships. His only other comment was that sense of adaptiveness, how each of us responds to the challenges that life inevitably faces, that also is a critical, critical factor. And the question is, what do we do with that sense of adaptiveness? Is this something we can teach? This is Stuart Dow sitting in for Leo Gold. I used to be a lawyer, gave it up to go into education, and that's one of the most powerful, interesting subjects that I think that I can teach and work with my kids on, as well as my faculty and staff, that sense of attaining personal fulfillment and paying attention to how we adapt and the relationships that we form with others. All of that out of the Atlantic Monthly article and the Harvard study. Second, I told you about my daughter Eleanor and her crazy, beautiful golden locks that she thinks are unattractive because they're not straight. They're not straight. She wants straight hair. Why does she want straight hair? Because Disney princesses have straight hair. Because Barbies have straight hair. I observed it, couldn't believe it, and now I have a whole new appreciation for when members of the African-American or Hispanic community complain about Barbies. I get it. I get it. I didn't get it before. I got it intellectually. Now I get it emotionally. But, of course, there is a new black Barbie on the market. That's part of why that's in the news as well. So that was prompts number one and two, both dealing with the realm of human capital. And then I turn, lastly, not lastly, but perhaps penultimately, second from last, I want to talk to you about an interview that was, again, earlier this week in the New York Times business section. This from the CEO of Accenture. Now, I have to tell you, at one point I was considering going into the consulting business, and I don't mean this as a disdainful, disrespectful comment about consultants, just as I don't mean, by the way, to take any shots at lawyers. I come from a family of lawyers. The profession just wasn't right for me. Well, a very good friend of mine used to work for Accenture, and he absolutely begged me not to go into consulting. He said, Stuart, it is as soulless as the law. He said, if you felt suffocated serving as a commercial litigator, you ain't going to feel any better working as a commercial or corporate consultant. And I think Alex may have been right. Alex is a smart guy, so I should probably listen to Alex. That said, I have to confess that I was impressed with an interview that I read recently, earlier this week, a gentleman named William Green, who is chairman CEO of Accenture, that very consulting firm where my friend Alex used to work. This guy, I think, actually had some interesting insights. He was interviewed by the Times to talk about leadership. I want to read you a few of the excerpts, again, from William Green, CEO of Accenture. And I want you to consider, again, the question of how it relates to human capital and the issues we've already spoken of and talked about. What's going on with Eleanor and her hair and Barbie dolls and that sense of image and sense of self that comes from external stimuli and that sense of internal personal happiness and fulfillment that comes out of the Harvard study. Consider the following from the CEO of Accenture, a huge consulting company. First question was, tell me about important leadership lessons you've learned. And the head of Accenture says this. He says, I'm a proud plumber's son from Western Massachusetts. In my family, working with tools is the highest honor. It isn't how many degrees you have. It's what you can do. So that had a big impact on me. What that means to me is it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter even what you talk like or where you went to school, where you came from, or anything of the ilk. What matters is what you're capable of. He went on to say that he sat through a three-day seminar once at Accenture, and this was for new managers. And I'm sure that all of you or some of you in the corporate world have experienced what I'm about to describe or what Green from Accenture is about to describe. He says that they were sitting in a seminar for over 3 days. One of these 3 days, I'm sure it was in a big hotel room with bad coffee. And they are told of 68 specific things that they should either do or not do in order to be successful. So the head of Accenture says he gets up, as at that point he was a middle manager. He thinks to himself, there's no way in hell that I can remember 68 things that are going to help me be successful. And he's right. So he whittled it down to three. He says the first is competence. Just be good at what you do. Second is have confidence in yourself. Have a sense that you're good at what you can do. And the third is caring. He says, it's not about just you or one individual. It's all about team, even in corporate America. And in the end, he says, caring about customers, company, the people around you, recognizing that they're the ones who will make you look good, that will in fact help you become good. So competence, confidence, and caring, says the head of this big corporate consulting firm Accenture. He then says something interesting also. He says, why do you move people around you? Apparently, he's surrounded by a very, very top, not administrative, but management team. And he admits, he says, yeah, I think I've got probably 15 bona fide CEOs on my team. He says, but the reason I move them is because the reason people leave companies is they get bored. Again, this guy gets human capital. People get bored. At least if you're good, you get bored. People who aren't so engaged probably don't get bored. He says, but the highest performing people are those who are always seeking to learn. And as long as they're learning, they won't leave. They won't leave Accenture. When they start thinking about leaving, when they start to respond to headhunters, when they start checking out what else is out there, it's because they haven't been learning. So what he does is he makes sure that they are constantly learning and engaging. Right? And that therefore they continue to grow. And so they won't run off and be their own CEOs. Now, by the way, consider what he's talking about in terms of that Harvard study again. What does the Harvard study tell us? The Harvard says it's about relationships. And then he says that inner city group of boys from Boston, what was the key to their success? It was being engaged with something, right? When we get bored, as we know, that's when we sort of make mistakes. Last thing he says, he's talking about how he hires. I want to read you that because I think it's fascinating. He calls it one of the core competencies at Accenture. He says they get 2 million resumes a year. 2 million resumes a year, and they hire between 40 and 60,000 people. Now, what's interesting is this article was literally just published this past week in the New York Times. I cannot imagine that Accenture is still hiring at those numbers, but maybe they are. But in any event, I'll read you from the interview. So let's talk about hiring. He says, I say that in simple terms, we need people, who, of course, who are analytical, who have common sense and good judgment, but most important is their ability to get along with other people because we are in the people business. He says, now we're taking a more scientific approach to how we recruit. We do something called critical behavior interviewing. It's based on the premise that past behavior is the best indicator of future behavior. Let me pause for a second. I always teach my kids that we are creatures of habit. You ever walk into a classroom when you're a kid? You remember this? You always sit in this. Even if there's no assigned seating, my students always sit in the same seats. always, I never assigned seats, and yet I would make a note of where they're sitting, and then I would call them on it about a month later. I would say, look around, did I ever tell you, Shirley, to make sure that you're the second one on the left back row, or that you, Bill, should be sort of on my right here? I never made a point of saying it, and yet look what y'all have done. For the last 6 months, you guys are sitting in that exact same place. It's because we're creatures of habit. That's why we're creatures of habit. So when you're parenting a kid, and they ask you, but why does this matter? Why do I have to tuck in my shirt? Or why do I have to wear the uniform? Or why do I have to brush my hair? Or why do I have to clean up my room? The best answer is never. It's never because I told you to. Right? A whole sense of power. Oh, because I'm the one in charge and I said. That's not going to persuade them. If you say, well, that's the rule, policy. That's not going to persuade them. You got to give them a meaningful reason to do it, right? It's same with a kid, same as someone in the workplace. So if you engage them and you say, I'll tell you why. The thing is, we're creatures of habit. And so when you clean up your room every day, you begin to create a habit of tidiness, of neat, of being neat. And that's actually going to sort of morph or bleed, either positively or negatively, into other realms in your life. We know that it does that. We know that it does that. So now you're not beating up your kid over what, for them, seems inane. There's no great purpose. They like living in a mess, right? You know, kids do. Doesn't bother them the way it might bother you. So you've got to persuade them in some sort of, in a way that they actually can understand the benefit. So the head of Accenture is saying the same thing. We're creatures of habit, right? And so past behavior, whatever I did last week, I'll probably do it again this week. And whatever I did next week, I'll probably do the following week. It's arresting those habits that's so hard. But that's why it's important. That's what teaching is all about. Whether you're teaching kids or you're teaching and working with colleagues as a manager and executives. Head of Accenture then goes on to say he wants to look for people who have faced adversity and how they've responded to it. Again, think about the Harvard study. The Harvard study was about relationships, but it was also about what he calls adaptability. So the head of Accenture is saying, I want to see people who can respond in constructive, positive ways to negative experiences, because we're all going to have negative experiences. It's a question of, have you learned and have you grown? Read you the last couple of Q&A's from this New York Times interview. He says, so what I want to do when I'm looking at people, I want to say before I hire them, have you learned? What have you demonstrated? What behaviors do you have, and have you shown intuition? Do you have the ability to synthesize and act? Have you shown the ability to step up and make a choice? I was recruiting at Babson College, which is up in Boston, by the way. This was back in 1991, says Green. The last recruit of the day, I get his resume. And I get a blue sheet attached to it, which is the form that I'm supposed to fill out with all this stuff, and his resume is attached to the top. His resume is very light. No clubs, no sports, no nothing. He's at Babson, which is a good school. It's not Harvard, but it's a good school. He's got a 3.2, so he's a B student. At a B school, probably. He studied finance. And his work experience says, Sam's Diner. That's all it says, Sam's Diner. References on request. It's the last interview of the day, and I have seen all these people come through strutting their stuff, and they've got portfolios, and they've got semesters studying abroad, and here comes this guy. He sits, his name is Sam, and I say, Sam, let me ask you a question. What else were you doing while you were here at Babson? And he says, well, I worked at Sam's Diner. That's our family business. And I leave on Friday after classes, and I go and I work at the family business until they close. I work all day Saturday till closing. I work Sunday until close. And then I drive back to Boston to go to Babson. I wrote on that blue sheet, says the CEO, William Green of Accenture, hire him. That's it. He saw in this kid character. And we have to be teaching character, folks. We have to teach character. We have to teach it to students. We have to teach it to our kids. We also have to teach it to our colleagues. And we can. Consider now a song from Elton John's Tumbleweed Connection. It's called Where To Now, St. Peter. Stuart Dow sitting in for Leo Goat on the New Capital Show on a beautiful, beautiful Thanksgiving Day. Tony, you have any updates on traffic? I bet it's clear. That's my prediction.
Clear. Well, it was clear. Now we have an accident. It is South Sam Houston Tollway westbound at Wayside. Now, there are two vehicles involved, the first ramp lane and the shoulder lane. So please expect delays. We still have pavement repair happening at I-45 northbound at I-10 Katy. So please expect delays. Happy holidays from KPFT. Now back to you.
If you're driving on those roads, it's true there's very little traffic, but if you are imbibing, if you're having a little Thanksgiving celebratory wine or, let's see, Bloody Mary, that's actually what I'm craving, I have to admit it. But if you're doing that, please grab a designated driver, call a cab, don't drive if you had a few too many, even if the roads are clear. Be safe. New Capital Show with Leo Gold. He's on vacation. This is Stuart Dow, former attorney who became an educator. We're talking about human capital this afternoon. We've talked a little bit about the Atlantic Monthly Harvard study. We've talked about my daughter's curly hair and why she wants straight hair because of those external stimuli called Disney princesses and Barbie dolls. We've looked at an interview with the Accenture CEO, who also talks about human capital. And maybe I shouldn't say it's extraordinary. It makes great sense that he ends up sort of reiterating some of the very key lessons that longitudinal study from Harvard showed, that about relationships matter most, as well as that sense of adapting to adverse conditions, because each of us faces them, folks. You can't get through this life without some bumps, bruises, and scrapes. It just doesn't happen. So the question is, how do you respond? So it's Thanksgiving, and that's the topic that I asked you to think about and to consider. What is it you're thankful for in terms of your own development, as well as their development with relationships with people around you? Now, the thing about Thanksgiving is it's a fantastic and quintessential American holiday. There's football, which is sort of uninteresting to me, actually, because I think the NFL has gotten a little boring. But I tend to prefer college now. But in any event, leave aside the football. There's basically a lot of food. There's no religion, right? So this is the one holiday that doesn't matter if you're Buddhist or you're Muslim or you're Christian or you're Jewish. It's Thanksgiving. And so we all celebrate it, right? We all celebrate it. And it brings our families together, which means we all get to experience the dysfunction, right? I mean, do you know anyone who's from a family that doesn't have some level of dysfunction? I mean, it's just not possible, right? By definition, family means some degree of dysfunction, doesn't it? Now, sadly, actually, in my case, my family, not for bitter, bad reasons, but we're sort of split up and we're doing Thanksgiving in different places. But I want to tell you the story, and I want to ask you to sort of call in. By the way, the number here is 713-526-5738. Again, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. It's 347. We're talking about human capital and Thanksgiving. I'm going to share the following story. This is when my father was up east at school, and he was invited by a classmate of his to the first Thanksgiving that this other couple had ever hosted. You know, it's really different, by the way. It's really different sort of going to a Thanksgiving and bringing a bottle of wine or bringing, you know, one of the courses. You know, honey, can you bring the green beans or something? That's really different than hosting a bunch of people when you're responsible, especially if you're the one cooking the turkey. Now, I have to tell you, I love cooking, but I don't cook turkeys. I've never cooked a turkey. Apparently, it is a unique challenge. For lots of reasons, including people's tendency to undercook them. It takes a long time to cook a turkey, but then you got to make sure that you don't cook it so long that it becomes dry, right? Because if you got to rely on the gravy, that's not a great Thanksgiving. I mean, gravy is important, but the turkey is supposed to be moist. All right, so my dad's up east, and he's invited to his friend's first family Thanksgiving, and they call it for noon. They call it for noon, all right? The woman says, I want everyone coming over at noon. So people get there, and I think the concept is they're going to have some drinks. They'll hang out, and she'll serve at 12:30, something like that. She walks out of the kitchen. She says, I think it's going to take longer than I thought. Can I get anyone maybe like some pancakes? And they're thinking, pancakes, man, this doesn't bode well. And they're like, no, we'll just wait for the turkey. She says, no, it's fine. You know what, it'd really be a pleasure. I think it's going to be a little bit longer than I thought. Let me make breakfast for people. Okay, it's noon. So she brews a pot of coffee, and she serves everyone breakfast. It's about 2 or 2:30, and she walks out of the kitchen. She says, you know, I am really sorry to do this, but let me fix sandwiches for people. Let me just fix maybe tuna, something like that. The turkey's coming along, but it's taking just a little bit longer. Now, it's a holiday, so no one's got anywhere to go, but, you know, they're kind of wondering. This is a little odd. We called for noon. It's now 2:30. So she does. She makes sandwiches. You know, she makes a big salad. She brings sandwiches out. I'm telling you, by the way, this story is absolutely true. My father is not a good liar. So you know where the story is going. It is now 6 o'clock in the evening, and the woman comes out. This is her first Thanksgiving that she's ever hosted, right? She's never actually cooked the turkey. She says, look, I know you guys have been here for quite a while, but let's order a pizza. Okay, now, this is meal three. This is meal three. They've had breakfast. They've had lunch. They're now having pizza, all right? And at this point, the whole thing is sort of so mortifying. I think people, it's kind of like watching a train wreck or a car wreck. They're kind of just wondering what's going to happen here. I mean, the implosion is imminent, right? So it's now 6, 7 p.m. at night. They order a pizza. I'm not lying when I tell you dinner was served at 11:30 at night. Okay? It had been a 12-hour Thanksgiving. She brings out the turkey. They cut into it. It is not even done. It is not done. She put a frozen turkey. She put it in the oven. It wasn't the right temperature. And this thing, my dad said, could have fed an army. The woman, God bless her soul. I've never met the woman, and yet I feel sorry for her. She broke down. She runs back to her bedroom. Her newlywed husband literally has to sort of pry her out of the closet because she is so mortified she's not coming out. It is the absolute worst Thanksgiving story I've ever heard. I don't know who this woman is, but I assume and pray that she has gotten better at managing her her turkey cooking and her hosting. So what's your worst Thanksgiving story? Do you have a bad one out there? Is there something related to turkey or family? Let me share with you a couple final thoughts before we close here on the New Capital Show. I'm going to read for you, which I usually don't do, but I want to read what I thought was a beautiful editorial in today's Times, what they call a Thanksgiving toast. And again, it seems to implicate and bring together some of the subjects we've talked about in terms of human capital. Sitting down with friends and family today, there will be thanks for the steady currents flowing out of the past that have brought us to this table. There will be thanks for the present union and the reunion of us all. And there will be prayerful thanks for the future. But it's worth raising a glass or suspending a forkful, for those who have gotten ahead of the toast, to be thankful for the unexpected, for all the ways that life interrupts and renews itself without warning. What would our lives look like if they held only what we planned? Where would our wisdom or patience or our hope come from? How could we account for these new faces at the Thanksgiving table, or for the faces we're missing this holiday, missing perhaps now all these years? It will never cease to surprise how the condition of being human means we cannot foretell with any accuracy what next Thanksgiving will bring. We can hope, and we can imagine, and we can fear. But when next Thanksgiving rolls around, we'll have to take account all over again, as we do today, of how the unexpected has shaped our lives. That will mean accounting for how it has enriched us, blessed us with suffering and with joy. That perhaps is what all this plenty is for, as you look down on the table to gather up the past and celebrate the present and open us up to the future. There's the short-term future where there will be room for seconds, but there's the long-term future, a time for blossoming and ripening, for new friends, new family, new love, and new hope. Most of what life contains comes to us unexpectedly, after all. It's our job to welcome it and to give it meaning. So let us toast what we cannot know and could not have guessed, and to the unexpected ways our lives will merge in the Thanksgiving to come. It's been a pleasure hosting. My name is Stuart Dow. We're going to conclude with one final song from Elton John's Tumbleweed Connection. It's called Come Down in Time. Wishing you and your families a very happy and healthy Thanksgiving.
Quiet silent seconds, I turned off the light switch, and I came down to meet you in the half light the moon left, while a cluster of nightjars sang some songs out of tune. A mantle of bright light shone down from a roof. I'll still hear her sing so clear in my ear, like it yesterday. Come down in time was the message she gave.
Happy Thanksgiving from KPFT.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
My name's Chris, and I've been using drugs for many years. I've been in and out of jail. I lost the trust of my friends, my family years ago. I was desperate, lonely, and totally hopeless until I found the opportunity of my lifetime, the CenterCor program in Deer Park, Texas. The Centacor treatment program helps men and women end the cycle of substance abuse once and for all. Centacor is not a quick fix, but if you're serious about changing your life, Centacor works. If you or someone you know is ready to build a new life, Centacor is here to help. Call 1-866-923-3428 and a Centacor representative will tell you how to get started. That's 1-866-923-3428.